好，我们今天继续呢地藏十轮经。那我们上次讲到第七轮哈，就是第六轮呢，就是你治理一个国家呢哈，当你这个整个的这个国防系统哈，对外的防御系统有了，然后大家安居乐业，然后又可以给大家娱乐哈，抒发自己的这个能量的时候呢，接下来要面对的其实是内在潜伏的一些问题哈，就是说有一些人他上次我们提到，就是说比如说恐怖分子他就潜伏在国家里面哈，那911什么时候发生我们也不知道哈，那现在社会里面还有什么，有一些精神的病患哈，它也是一个很潜伏的问题，如果说我们没有处理好的话，它随时发作也是会造成伤亡的。
So today we're going to continue our discussion on the Sutra of the Ten Chakra of Chittigarbha Bodhisattva. Last week we got as far as the sixth chakra, which was about once the country has become calm and safe, secured, then the king has to work on finding conduits for channels and ways for its people to find entertainment and to be able to use up their pent-up energy through the proper channel. And so today, we're moving on to the seventh chakra, which is about securing the nation within the border, and especially to find out all the hidden dangers. So let's take our society as an example. There are terrorists, and terrorists are hidden. So that's why there was the tragedy of September 11th, and it's hard to tell when it's going to explode again. So those need to be found out and investigated. Similarly, there are also people with psychological issues, and with these kind of people, again, it's like a time bomb. You never really know when it's going to explode. So those also has to be dealt with properly.
那同时呢，这个中国有一句俗话哈，他说山贼易防，家贼难防。好，意思就是说自己人反而不容易防御哈，因为大家比较不会有警戒心嘛，然后他又很了解你，所以什么时候会发生什么事，其实我们不好防御。那我有一次，以前我们常常要去旧金山的时候都要住居士家，那我有一次久久没去，然后后来轮到住那个居士家，那他就很高兴，他说哎呀法师，我终于解脱了哈，因为呢，我的女儿终于跟她的男朋友决定买房子搬出去了，小孩子通搬出去了，家里一片清净哈。那我说很好，他说来法师，我来泡咖啡给你喝，就翻一翻，哎，泡咖啡的那个很好的那套不见了，然后他的妈妈说啊，可能是 Angela 拿去了。他说不然我们来泡茶好了，又翻一翻，诶，茶具也不见了啊，然后大概又是 Angela 拿去了哈，然后他妈妈就很感慨说真的是女儿贼耶，你没有听过吗哈，就是女儿结婚出去的时候回到娘家哈，都是她都知道好的东西是什么，然后就把她搬回夫家去。
There, I don't know if you have ever heard of this. There's a Chinese saying that bandits in the mountains are easy to defend, yet the bandits within the household is difficult to guard. And that is because for things that's outside, external, it's easier to spot and you're more vigilant. Whereas for internal, people within the household, you trust them. So sometimes it's harder to stay as vigilant to really guard against them. So I personally had an example. We used to go to San Francisco a lot. And whenever we go to San Francisco, we stay with the volunteers there. And I haven't been for a while, and then I was there in San Francisco and visiting. I was staying with this one particular volunteer. And this volunteer was really thrilled to see me, and she also said to me that, Fashi, I'm finally liberated. My daughter has finally decided to move out with her boyfriend. So now we have the whole house to ourselves. Everything will be peace and quiet without distraction. And being so excited, she then said to me, let's have some coffee then. So she was very excited, and I'm trying to dig out her coffee making machine, all the fine china. She couldn't find them. And she said, perhaps my daughter Angela has took it. And so let's drink tea then. So she looked around a little bit more, and she couldn't find the tea set either. And she said, my daughter took it as well. So this goes well with a Chinese saying that there's a phrase that's called daughter bandit or daughter thief. And that's to say that, you know, the daughter that has been married outside of the family, whenever they come back to visit, they know where the best things are. So they will go and find them in the right place and take them home with them.
Okay. 所以呢，好，要防御别人很容易哈，防御自己人不容易。那同样的哈，不管是一个同一个家庭里面哈，那比如说同一个宗教里面，常常最伤害自己宗教的不是外面宗教的人，是我们自己内部宗教的人。常常伤害这个公司最大的不是你的竞争者，不是你的对手，而是你的员工被人家挖角，还有你的秘密被里面的人偷去给别人，那你就惨了。
So that extends to families as well as religion. So it's the hardest to fend for yourself from within, the inside, within family members or within the same religion. So oftentimes when there's some sort of when some sort of harm has been done to a religion, oftentimes it's not coming from outside another religion. It's from within the same religion. Similarly with companies, it tend to be within the company that the secrets get leaked out, or go to other companies. So from inside out, it's harder to defend that way.
所以哈，防御一个国家哈，那现在还有一个问题叫做什么间谍的，好，那就这。偷去人家国家不容易，干脆就在里面找人比较快，也是同样的问题。
And that goes with spies as well. Sometimes it's harder to go to your enemy's country. So sometimes it's easier maybe just to find spies, to plant spies from within that border and to have them steal information out for you.
那我们这样同理推到但佛轮就是说当我们要成佛然后就一步一步走到第七轮的时候其实很难防的是什么自己的烦恼一样的道理当别人要欺负你或是有外境种种境界的时候你还会说打起精神来为了这个家庭你一定要忍耐要不然呢就是说这个人这宿世的因缘我一定要用方法我一定要怎样就是说会想到用佛法或是禅法来保护自己然后来面对外境因为我们知道说这个外境境界来了是不好的我们要处理问题是当这个境界是来自于内心的时候呢很难调伏因为你觉得你是对的我们都会觉得我是对的我的观念我的知见我的价值观是对的所以当我们内心起贪嗔痴的时候呢其实很难防不是外境给你烦恼是你自己给自己烦恼的时候呢非常难觉察
So similarly with the seventh Buddha chakra when we're going along this path of trying to become attain Buddhahood, it's the hardest oftentimes to deal with all the vexation that's generating from within. Oftentimes when we encounter, confronted with external situations, enemies or difficult situations, those tend to be easier to deal with in comparison with internal vexations. With external situations, if it's an enemy or some adverse situation, you can tell yourself to use your methods of meditation or use Buddha Dharma and try to endure it for the sake of your family or whatnot. But whenever it's some vexations that's coming from your own mind, they are difficult to deal with because you think you are right. You believe in your own values. You think your views and values are correct. So they are harder actually to confront with. So the kind of vexations that's generated from your own mind, the cravings, hatred, and ignorance are the most difficult to combat.
所以在这个第七佛轮的时候呢，那佛陀就告诉我们说，好，你已经可以处理外境了哈，你也身心安定了哈，你的六根呢都不会被外面所干扰了哈。那这时候呢，要开始修禅定哦。那修禅定的时候，就是真正的要开始面对自己了。这个时候呢，会产生种种的问题。我们就必须要如实的面对自己的贪嗔痴了。那假设有禅期经验的，就禅一也会了，就是说比较长期的这个修行的这个过程当中，我们常常会怎样，外面都没事，都这么好的禅修中心，这么好的食物，这么好的疗房，那好好的禅修的时候呢，还是常常会怎样起烦恼，还有就是说自己已经在自己的记忆里面打转了很久，把过去以来所有的不满意，所有的记在脑子里面所有的一些执着全部搬出来复习一遍，然后再给他加油添醋，然后呢再确认自己是对的这样子，然后自己的嗔恨心，自己的贪心，还有自己的痴心，不断的，还有贪嗔痴慢疑，不断的就会来你从内心里面升起，那这都是会影响我们修定修慧的一个障碍。那这里佛陀就提出了种种法要告诉我们说，当我们在修禅定的过程中，要知道这些方法来克服所有内心的障碍。
So, in the seventh Buddha chakra, the Buddha says, now you have learned ways to deal with all the external phenomena and obstacles. Now it's time to learn to deal with yourself. And you do so in the process of meditation. And in this process of meditation, you have to learn to face yourself truthfully, truthfully and honestly. So oftentimes during meditation retreats, especially the longer ones, sometimes in the one days, but often in the 7 or 10 days, you are sort of forced to confront your own vexations. And so during the retreat, the external phenomenon, everything is fine, the place you are living is fine, the hall that you're sitting in is great, but this is when your internal vexations start to arise non-stoppingly. And you start to get entangled with all your past memories, recalling all the unfavorable situations, all the strong attachment that you had. And then based on these memories, you edit them. You add a little bit here and subtract something there. And all that you're being so busy doing is to ensure that your own view is right. You were on the right side. So you spend all your energy doing this, and this is where all your cravings, hatred, and ignorance are surfacing, arising, and it will ultimately affect our process of cultivating samadhi and wisdom. So this is when the Buddha then says, or in the process of meditation, you're going to be confronted with all your vexations. So these are some methods I can provide as medicine, Dharma medicine, to help you deal with your vexations.
好，所有的哈，我去看一些管理的书哈，啊，常常有时候都会讲说怎么领导啊，怎么管理有没有？我发现一个共通哈，大家的共通结论哈，都说自己最难管理。自己最难被自己领，自己是最难领导的，然后自己是最大的敌人，有没有听过？所以很多很多的事情，会挑战真正的是发生在面对自己的时候，而不是面对他人的时候。
So I've read quite a few books on, say, organizational management or how to run things.And in all these books, I found that there's a commonality that oftentimes they all said that oneself is the hardest to deal with, to manage. It's the hardest to manage oneself. It's the hardest to lead oneself. And oftentimes your worst enemy is yourself.
那在这个经文里面呢、啊，我取一部分哈，它是说若诸有情哈，就是我们这些有情的众生呢哈，有好几类啦。那这边他提供了一个是第一个是修不净观哈，来除病烦恼病哈。那这边的烦恼病大多是指贪哈。如果你发现呢，你在贪嗔痴慢疑的所有烦恼当中，你发现你的问题常常出现在贪的部分哈，贪钱、贪情、贪爱、贪啊，还有什么可以贪哈？贪名哈。就是你一直想要拥有很多东西的时候，那你就要来修不净观。好，那如果呢，你是嗔恨型的人哦，就是哇，你可以啊，钱都给人啦，然后人家需要帮忙都帮了，什么都可以给，但你看不顺眼的事情就很容易生气。这个你也看不顺眼，那个你也看不顺眼，这个人也不对，那个人也不对，很容易生气的时候呢。叫修犯住，犯住呢就是什么？持戒忍辱，好，要持戒，要忍辱哈，这样子。
So, I have excerpted one part from the sutra, and the text says, among all the sentient beings, there are many different categories. If you find yourself, the type of people who have a lot of cravings, whether it's cravings for greed, for money, for love, passion, sensory pleasures, or things, then you need to practice the meditation of impurity. It will help you deal with all the cravings. On the other hand, if you find yourself often getting angry,You have a lot of anger. Maybe you're the type of person who is very willing to give offerings, to share with other people. I can share with you all my money, that's no problem. But you find yourself easily finding things going against your wish, that you look at this, that's unfavorable. You look at that, and that person is doing something wrong. Easily angered. In that case, then you need to practice the meditation on forbearance.
那如果说呢，有一种烦恼哈、是属于吃，搞不清楚状况，然后常常事情为什么发生，然后为什么改变，搞不清楚，就常常处于这种无明的当中哈，那就要修缘起观，就要知道说事情是怎么来怎么去的哈。就是修缘起观，然后我们不是有十二因缘嘛，缘起法，对不对？那知道说自己为什么会起贪、起嗔，自己为什么会不清楚，那为什么不知道大家需要什么，为什么不知道大家在生气了，不知道大家需要什么帮忙，好，然后就是处于一种混混沌沌的这个时候呢，就要常常观缘起，观察事情是怎么发生的，怎么改变，怎么结束的，这样子。
If you find yourself having a lot of vexations of You can say ignorance, or oftentimes you're in a situation you don't know why things are the way they are. You don't know why certain things occur. You don't know why there are changes. And you don't know the cause and effect or how things come to be. You find yourself often in the fog, not knowing why you became angry, why you became greedy, or you're in a situation you don't know why people become angry at you or what kind of things they need. If you're oftentimes feeling yourself confused and befuddled, then you need to practice meditating on dependent arising or the 12 dependent origination. And this is a way for you to understand how things come to being, how things come to exist, and how things eventually disintegrate and perish. Understanding how things arise and end.
其实在我们的日常生活中啊，我们有很多的贪跟嗔 的升起，其实是因为吃。因为不知道为什么事情会这样发生，所以贪，所以嗔。然后有的人哦，比较好一点啊，不贪不嗔，他就一直 confused， 为什么他会一直来问说，为什么呢？我对他这么好，为什么他不爱我呢？好，我把我的先生照顾那么好，为什么他又去找别人呢？好，我这么照顾我的小孩子，我付出这么多，我甚至辞去了我的工作，好，这样子接送我的小孩，为什么他不努力读书？为什么呢？他都不听我的话，为什么他要离家出走呢？然后就是一给自己一个很大的压力，说奇怪，我哪里做错了吗？我不对了吗？我不好吗？我不是一个称职的妈妈吗？就是会一直会伤害自己，然后到后来就是忧郁症。
So oftentimes in our everyday life, we give rise to greed or hatred, and that's a surface phenomenon. But the underlying cause is actually due to ignorance, not knowing the reason, not knowing why things come to be. So some people, they don't get angry or they don't have a lot of greed, but still they find themselves often in a confused situation, often asking why. Why is that I've been so good to this person, but he doesn't love me in return? Why is that I take such good care of my husband already, but he doesn't love me back? Why is that I'm doing such a good job, I'm trying so hard to be a good mom? I even quit my job so that I can take care of my kids more first-handedly, but why is that they don't work hard, they don't listen to me, and why is that they run away from home? So this kind of people, they're oftentimes trapped in this cloud of confusion, wondering why and what's wrong with me. And when this kind of symptoms become even more serious, then it can sometimes lead to depression.
以前哦，国兴法师有跟我们讲一个真人的故事哈，就是有一个太太呢，她非常的对她先生的对她先生对她的态度非常的这个就是 upset， 就是非常的不能接受，然后他就去推拿，就去给推拿师推拿，他就一直抱怨他的先生说这样一直讲他先生哪里不对，那讲了好几个月之后，有一天他就忽然回问那个推拿师说，你觉得我的先生这样做是不是不对？然后那个人终于忍不住了，他就跟他说，如果我是你的先生，我早就给你他觉得说你应该跟你的先生道歉。他就有点震惊，你知道吗？因为他希望说他跟推拿师讲了那么久，因为希望这个推拿师站在他这一边同情他嘛。结果他先生听了那么他那个推拿师听了那么久之后，他觉得说你应该跟你的先生道歉。好，然后他就很气，他说我才不要跟他道歉呢。他说我怎么可能叫我怎么面对他跟他道歉嘛。他说没有关系，你夜阑人静的时候拿他的照片，好，你把他照片拿出来跟他说对不起，这样也可以啦。然后你没有经过一个外人，你在那个情境中一直觉得说他 你这个先生，我这样付出，你这样这样，你一直不对，你是不对，你一定要有一个旁观者哈、哦，忽然之间点你一下，啊，那你才发现说，哎呦，好、哦，你怎么好像是自己不对哈、哦，啊，又没有勇气哈、哦、去道歉，通常是先生比较有勇气道歉哈、哦，太太通常是没有勇气跟先生道歉，所以那个推拿师就跟他说，你就把你的先生照片拿起来跟他说对不起，也可以嘛哈。哦
So once 国清法师 share a real life story with us. So he has known, this wife came to him and shared a story of hers. She said, this wife has always been, displeased with her husband. The way that she's very unhappy and angry about the way her husband has treated her.And so, this wife goes to a massage therapist. And, oftentimes during the massage sessions, she would, dump all her anger and complain to this masseuse about her husband. That he has treated me this way, he has treated me that way, he has wronged me this way and that way. And so she has been complaining nonstop for several months.Several months has passed, and one day, suddenly, she asked this massage therapist, so don't you think I have the right to be angry? Don't you think that my husband is lousy? And at this juncture, this massage therapist, actually, he or she couldn't take it anymore. So she said to the wife, saying, I think you should be the one that's apologizing to your husband.And the wife said, What are you talking about? You should be on my side. Why should I be apologizing to him? And the massage therapist said that if I were your husband, I would actually probably slap you or whatever, because it's you who needs to apologize to him. And the wife says, but I can't. You know, why should I apologize? I can't apologize to him. And the massage therapist then said,Well, if that's really the case, then maybe at night you can take your husband's photo and try to apologize to your husband's photo. You know, that you can use that as a mean to repair your relationship. And so oftentimes in a relationship, what we found based on my observation is that husbands tend to have more courage to apologize to the wife, but the wife oftentimes don't. So in those situations, using a photograph,could be a way to repair.
哦，所以我们在座的哈、哦、太太们哈、哦，就没有勇气跟先生道歉，就把照片拿出来，手机也可以嘛哈、哦。至少就你的心态有一点改变哈、哦，这样缘起法哈、哦，很多事情的发生，但是处理的时候就不要 nagging 哈、哦，不要一直碎碎念哈、哦，碎碎念就不会。帮忙不多了哈，就是事情的发生有什么该处理啊，但是不要一直 repeat 哈，一直讲一直讲一直念这样子。
So for all the wives among this audience, if you feel that there's anything that you need to apologize to your husband for and you can't quite bring yourself to it, then you can try that. Try using a photograph or even cell phone. The photos on your cell phone will work. You know, try to apologize to the photo as a way to change your own mentality. And this is sort of related to dependent arising. When there is a problem, you try to find the source of the problem, try to repair from there, but try not to nag. Nagging seldom helps. So try to find the cause of the problem, try to fix that, but don't keep repeating yourself. That's not going to bring you too much positive results.
那在下一个呢是修习念哈，就是数习惯哈，阿那波那这样子哈。那它是对治的烦恼病呢，它就是吊举哈。那这边的吊举也不是说就像打坐的时候你会散乱心哈，东想西想。我后来发现哈，知识分子的脑筋动太多，就是很习惯就是动脑筋哦，看到什么问题就想解决，然后看到什么就有自己的一套逻辑思维出来哈、哦。那我因为我自己本身也有这个问题哈、哦，就看到什么问题的时候，你马上就已经 come up 已经一些哈、哦、想法，说要怎么做，要怎么处理哈、哦。那所以就是说 很多事情就会发现自己想太多。好，就是那这时候就要修习念，怎么样把这个念头哈，这个止住。好，就是该想的时候想，不该想的时候就不要想，要有这种能力哈，可以控制自己哈。那我发现我们习惯想的结果就是看到什么就想，那这时候就是不能自主的想。好，所以一般我们去大专院校哈，有时候教这些什么研究生啊老师们哈，打坐哈，很难呢。他真的大家一坐下来就是满脑子的哈，好实验啊什么教学什么东西，就很自然的就出来哈，是脑筋有十个 project， 就十个东西就一坐下来就开始想，他就不能自主，就叫他停都不能停哦。然后我就发现说，哇，真的好可怕，这个知识分子哈，尤其现在高科技哈，什么东西哈，还有滑手机，滑手机也是一种钓具耶，是吧？你们会不会，上次我有没有讲过，我们有一个妈妈，她来跟我们法师干入门，她说她的 teenager 一个小男孩不听话，现在 grounded 没有用，现在的 punishment 是把他手机拿掉，就他把他手机没收一个小时而已哦，他对他妈妈骂脏话，气到这种程度，他没有办法一个小时不用手机，这是一个很严重的现代钓局，需要克服。
And for those people who find your mind tend to be very restless, then you need to practice the meditation of breath or anapanasati. This is not only referring to dealing with the kind of distracted mind that we have during sitting meditation. It's for anyone who finds yourself to think a lot. And I find this very, very common among intellectuals. People who are intellectual, who've gone to school for a long time, who tend to think too much andwhenever they're confronted with a situation or whatnot, immediately come to their mind is all sorts of logic, solution, plans of action, etc. It's constantly having too much thoughts in the mind. So it's actually very important for us to learn to control when to think and when not to think. And this incessant, non-stoppable thinking is really out of control, and it's actually quite scary. So that's why sometimes when we go to colleges or graduate schools to teach people, these professors or graduate students, how to meditate, we find it very difficult because whenever they sit down, quiet down, their minds immediately start to think about all these experiments they are going to run, the projects, the proposals. There are like 10 things already lined up in their head. So,this is a form of restlessness, not only the kind of distraction that we usually refer to. And also, do you know that this constant urge to look at your cell phone is also a form of distractedness, restlessness? It's a modern distraction. So once I talked to a mom, and she said this modern days, to punish your child if the child is not good, grounding, you know, the old fashion of grounding the child is no longer useful.So what she did is, when she felt the need to punish her son, she took away her son's cell phone. And by just taking the cell phone away for an hour, so the son doesn't have access to the cell phone for 1 hour, he became so restless, so agitated that he actually cursed at his mother. So this is a modern form of restlessness that we should all be very, cautious and be aware of.
所以我们现代的人要练习以前呢，因为 internet 不是那么发达的时候我们大概要上网不是要算钱吗？大家都会计算说，一天上网几个小时。我觉得现在呢，因为都吃到饱的那种就是缴一个月可以无限制的嘛我们现在反而要练习说，一天一定要在一早上、中午、晚上一个时段，手机要给它关机，不要再看手机了。练习就是一段时间看手机处理事情。当然啦，你如果你的事业、你的工作需要看，那你还是要一天之中 要练习就是你自己个人的时间，就一个小时不看，不会死，世界也不会毁灭。就这个部分，因为我后来发现，现在禅修，我们在日常生活修行的时候，面对的问题就是这个手机的问题，变成是一个很大的一个吊局。
So this day and age with internet being so readily available, remember say, a couple decades ago that use of internet, it's count by minute, right? So people are very cautious and not to use it too much. But these days, it's all you can eat. It's unlimited access to internet. So for us to practice meditators or every person should try to practice having the cell phone turn off for a certain period of time in the morning, at noon, at night, to have it completely shut down so you don't have access to your cell phone. If your work really depends on endless access to the cell phone, then that's a different story. But even so, nothing is going to happen if you shut the phone for an hour a day or an hour in the morning, an hour at noon, an hour at night. Just, turn it off for an hour. So this access and unstoppable use of internet, I find to be becoming an even more and more severe problem for modern day meditators.
那这个哈这一段呢，这个佛陀提供的这个方法，对治内心的方法，对治内心产生烦恼的方法呢，那其实在我们一般禅修的手册里面哈，有一个比较完整的哈，叫做五庭心观哈，大家应该听过哈。那五庭心观呢，如果有兴趣哈，可以去查更具体的资料哈，它就是基于刚刚讲的比较完整，就是说当你发现你贪心起的时候可以修不净观，如果你嗔心起要修慈悲观，如果痴心起要修因缘观，如果我见很重，就是说这个身体是我啊，我怎样，我要太对自己身体太执着，我要修戒分别观。那你发现你自己业障很重，想要修行打坐也不行，念佛也不行，那不大就是修念佛观，也就是在就是常常念佛累积自发现自己要修行的业障很重。像我们有时候打坐这个打坐的时候打坐就睡觉跪着也睡我有一次就是这样，我睡了三天，早中晚休息时间都睡，我想说把它睡饱一点再打坐，一般两三天应该是可以的。我睡到了第五天还在睡去小餐的时候师父就叫我去念拜佛，那个就是障碍出现了，它不是因为你身体疲惫，就是那个障碍。还好那次是禅师师睡到第五天还有九天哇，就去拜佛跪忏悔惭愧忏悔拜佛，拜了两天还有七天可以精进用功，就发现业障重，你可以念佛这样或拜佛这样子，然后发现自己很散乱的时候，你想默照想话头就是很散乱的时候，回到熟悉，回到很简单的一二三四到十的熟悉观，这是五庭心观，是我们禅修者常常要具备的方便方法，把自己这个处理一些障碍的方便法。
So the portion that we just talked about, the meditation medicines that the Buddha provided, there's actually a more detailed description of them in our handbooks on meditation. A lot of the books that we have talks about this, which is the five methods for stilling the mind. And so it goes into further detail about teaching you expedient means to deal with problems that arise during meditation.So when you find yourself having lots of cravings, a lot of greed, then that's when you meditate on impurity. And if you have a lot of anger, hatred, then you meditate on metta, compassion, and loving compassion. If you find yourself to be often confused and feeling ignorant, then that's you need to use the contemplation of cause and conditions. But if you find yourself to be strongly attached to yourself or strongly attached to your physical body, then you engage in the contemplation of the four elements. And also, if you find yourself to be shrouded by karmic obstacles, then you practice the meditation on reciting the Buddha's name. Oftentimes, when we try to engage in meditation, we find ourselves unable to do so due to too much distractions, or sometimes we get very sleepy, very drowsy. For me, there was this one, I once had this experience where I kept falling asleep during meditation. And so I tried to sleep to the fullest during the first couple of days, because oftentimes if you're physically really tired, 2 or 3 days of sleep during meditation should do the trick. But instead of finding myself waking up gradually, I actually, on day 5, I found myself still very, very sleepy. So during the one-on-one interview, I sought advice from Shifu, and Shifu said, well, in this case, this is no longer, your drowsiness is no longer due to physical fatigue. It's actually due to your passive karmic obstacles, obstructions. So this is when you actually have to practice repentance and prostrating and reciting Buddha's names. Fortunately, that was a 14-day retreat. So even being drowsy on day 5, then switch gear, I start to practice prostrating to the Buddha, reciting Buddha's name, and repent for two days. And after those 2 days, then I was able to then continue with meditation practice, overcoming the drowsiness. So again, if you found yourself to be facing karmic obstacles and making it difficult to meditate, then use the method of reciting the Buddha's name. And the last one is to deal with scatteredness. If your mind is very scattered, whether you want to do silent illumination or Huatou retreat, you just find yourself not able to settle down, then use the meditate on counting breath. Going back to the beginning, very simple numbers, 1 to 10, and focus on the breathing. That should help you counter scatteredness. So these are methods that we've been talking about in the books as well, some expedient means to help you deal with the kind of difficulties that arises during your practice of meditation.
那我们禅修者还要知道另外一个，就是我们有五盖，就是基本禅修者会有五种的障碍，那基本上还是用五停心没问题，因为这些是重复的。那唯一一个就是对治贪嗔睡眠跟调举，是跟五盖是五停心是重复的，但有一个非常不容易，会非常我觉得比较严重的，其实是疑，就是当你在用方法的时候，你开始怀疑这个方法真的有用吗？这个老师是不是有问题啊？就你对于老师跟方法起怀疑的时候，或是对于佛法起怀疑的时候，这个就非常的严重。好，那就要怎么样？要升起信心。那这个通常在师父的禅期里面都会讲，对三宝的信心，对老师的信心，还要对方法的信心。因为有时候方法太简单，反而大家觉得这能让我开悟吗？这最少要有十几二十个步骤，十几二十个什么，至少要什么四禅八定啊，然后几个阶，二十个阶让我可以follow，好像这样才比较有在进步啊。那你说那个 silent illumination 默绍在那边也不知道在干嘛，然后这样就能开悟吗？也不知道自己怎样了，然后就会开始对这个方法产生怀疑。那身为代禅修的老禅师来讲，他在禅期的开示过程、引导过程中，他有一个很重要的责任，就是让禅修者对于佛法、对于老师还有对于方法产生遥不可破的信心。
So oftentimes when ordinary people try to engage in meditation, there are 5 different kinds of hindrances that may arise. And again, you can deal with these hindrances by using the five methods of sealing the mind, they basically overlap with each other. But there's one last one that's especially important, is having doubt or mistrust, lack of trust, lack of confidence in the method, or it could be in the master, in the teacher, or even in Buddha Dharma. And I find this to be the most serious problem of them all. So to counter it, it's necessary to practice meditation on generating arising faith of the three triple jewels to the teachers as well as to the method. Sometimes the method is too straightforward, and people may feel that this is too easy. Such an easy method cannot possibly lead to enlightenment. So they start to have this kind of doubt. People start to think that, oh, a good method should have X number of steps, or it should lead to different levels of attainment, like the four dhyanas and the eight stages of samadhi. So this silent illumination that you guys are talking about is too out there, that it's not very tangible. I don't know if that's going to lead to anything substantial. But when people have this kind of doubts, the teacher, the master that's leading the retreat, one of the most important job in guiding participants is to help them generate faith, generate confidence in the method that you're using and in the teacher as well as in Buddha Dharma.
好，然后这是前半段的方法，是基本的，基本功，给我们初阶的。后面呢，经文里面讲后面这个就真的比较这个高阶一点了哈。他说呢，还有要修什么来除病恼烦恼病呢？因为不同层次的禅修者，他会有不同层次的烦恼。那在高阶禅修者呢，还要修三解脱门哈。这之前我们讲过，其实他三解脱门就是要修什么能所空啊。然后要修净律，这边讲的净律就要修四禅八定，好，然后修无色，要观五蕴皆空，好，这心经有讲嘛，哈，要讲到五蕴皆空就了不起了，哈，然后最后呢是什么？守楞严三摩地，就是修最高的佛定，好，所以不同层次的人，这些都到后来都这个是给菩萨的，哈，就说不同层次的禅修者，他有不同层次的烦恼。那佛陀就提供比较高阶的是三解脱门啊，净律无修无色修守楞严三摩地，来帮助他们克服不同层次的烦恼。
This next part is for people who are higher attainment, and it's actually spoken for bodhisattvas at a much higher level than us ordinary beings. Those earlier slides will help us deal with our issues.But this is for people who are at the higher stage of development. One is that it's necessary for them to also meditate on the three gates to liberation, which is being non-dualistic, no subject, no object, and meditation on emptiness. And there's also the meditation of the four dhyanas and the eight samadhis, and also the meditation on no forms.And finally, it's important to also practice the Suragama Samadhi.
那因为好，这个我如果有时间哈，要把这几个方法哈，就是我们在菩萨的五十二位阶哈，不同的烦恼呢，对治这个方法，它其实是可以相对整理起来的哈。下次有空再来整理。但是呢，这张图呢，是我们在讲。唯识学哈，五十二位阶的时候讲到最后的十地菩萨，十地菩萨哈，这的烦恼怎么破，然后到登破什么烦恼登几地哈，只是要让大家了解一下哈。你看哦，初地的菩萨呢，他必须要断分别起的烦恼障跟分别起的所知障哈，就是他是因为他的第六识起分别而起的我执跟法执，他还必须要断这两个才可以登出地。然后如果能够断到俱生起的烦恼障，也是俱生起的我执的时候，才可以登八地。 然后一直要到俱生起的所知障，就俱生起的我法执的这个烦恼也全部断尽了才可以登实地。那对照刚刚提佛陀提供的方法，就意思就是说，你看到八地的菩萨还有烦恼，是什么烦恼？俱生起的我法执还要断哦。所以这你要修守楞严定还要断这个。好，所以他就是从我们开始要修行，要面对自己，从凡夫到圣者，到登地的菩萨，再到圆满究竟的佛陀的时候呢，那这中间可是很多烦恼需要克服的，那就要很多的法药，修定的法的药来对治这些所有的烦恼，不同层次的烦恼。
So, as to, these different kind of Dharma meditation that, Dharma medicines that, we've been discussing, when I have time, I'll try to, it actually correspond with the 52 stages of Bodhisattvas, the 42 levels of Bodhisattvas. And that's also actually listed in the consciousness only school, of thoughts.And so later on, when we have time, then maybe I can expand on it and explain it in details and mapping it onto the 10 bhumis of Bodhisattva. But let's just take a really quick look at an example. At the first bhumi, Bodhisattva still need to cut off the vexations that arises from differentiations, and which is going to generate obstacles of concept and obstacles of vexations.That's for Bodhisattvas at the first bhumi. And further on, for Bodhisattvas at the seventh bhumi, in order to get to the eighth bhumi, then they have to cut off vexations that's innately arising, obstacles of concept, obstacles of vexations that's innately arising. So as you can see, stage by stage,in this path of from ordinary person to gradually becoming sagely, becoming bodhisattvas, stage by stage, there are many different types of vexations that need to be eradicated.
好，这样好，其实像呼隆讲的第七轮，其实第七轮是内容是非常的丰富几乎把我们所有禅修者需要具备的的方法几乎是要再讲一遍了但是这个因为刚开始这个只是一个其中的一轮只能粗略的介绍一下。那我们现在就要进入第八轮那一样的我们先讲这身为国王你内贼都能够防了然后呢你才可以安下心来想想这时候呢那个国王就开始回想想想他自己是在他自己还有周围的人是在不同的种姓就是说不同印度有五种种姓嘛那他小时候是怎么长大他小时候的时候玩什么游戏啊大家有没有记得你们小时候玩什么大家我小时候玩什么啊然后我到 teenager 的时候我学什么东西啊然后我到成人的时候我又要学什么东西然后我要料理国务就是身为国王他是 princess, prince 的时候他就开始要接受一些课程以后怎么当国王怎么料理国事然后以后登基的时候要怎么样才能够就是可以 take care, 就是很如意的 take care 所有一切那他就回想起他从小到大是怎么被培育成为一个国王然后可以这个很称心自在的担任国王的这个过程之后他开始要怎么样用同样的过程来教育他的百姓好你不能说自己是然后你就看到说那我的子民里面比如说我子民里面也有贵族啊印度嘛所以五种姓有贵族啊有富贵人家啦有商人对不对还有什么有商人还有奴婢还有什么 就是反正就 五种种性。那这种五种种性的人，我们要怎么样从小到大要怎么教育他？其实就是我们当代现代的话，就是我们的教育系统。我们现在不是 12K 吗？是不是 12K？ 就是大家一定要上的，从一年级到十二年级一定要上的啊。你要不要上大学看你啦啊，你也可以去学别的，但是他基本的教育要有，等于你这个国家一定要提供一个教育系统，一个完整的教育系统。即便呢，好，我们大学毕业的，大学毕业工作一下，哎，觉得好像要来念个硕士了呢，哈，觉得不够用了，再去念个博士。哎，那好，不念硕士博士，等我当护士当一段时间，哎，我要不要进修？我还有那个就是那个 school 在那个叫 extension， 对不对？我还有一些可以增长我的记忆。技术或是能力的啊，有时候学一学觉得你要学什么，然后就是等于这个国家必须要提供一个完整的教育体系，让各行各业的人能够这个在他的行业里面能够称职如意这样子。
So we just went over the seventh chakra very quickly. The seventh chakra was actually very rich to really discuss it extensively and in depth. It almost requires to go through all the methods and process of meditation. But because this is only seven chakras, only part of the ten chakras, so that was a really quick overview that I just gave you. So we're going to move on to the eighth chakra, the eighth kingly chakra, and that is after all the bandits and threats from internal as well as external, in and out of the border, has been taken care of, then the king has the leisure to look back to the way he or she was brought up his whole life. First looking at into the origin, the caste group that the king was from, and then to also think back to his childhood, what kind of games that he played, how he was taken care of by the caretakers. And then further on to think about the teenage years, what kind of subjects that he learned and what kind of activities he engaged in. And then thinking about adulthood, the type of training that was necessary and the task that was settled on him. And finally, as a crown prince, the kind of trainings and teachings that he had to undergo in order to become a qualified king, learning how to manage and deal with stately affairs. So after taking care of all the internal, external threats, the king has the leisure to think back, to think of the ways that he was brought up, the way he was nurtured, taken care of, and trained in his lifetime. And having got, think through, reflect about it, now the king's job is to apply the same kind of care and nurture to the citizens of his country. Applying that, whether it's to the nobilities, to the wealthy people, to the merchants, craftsmen, or even to the slaves. Basically, the eighth kingly chakra is about establishing a holistic, comprehensive educational system. Currently in the U.S., it's K-12, right? And then maybe people have the option to either go to college or grad school or not. But the eighth chakra is about establishing this comprehensive educational system so that people who want to study, after completing undergrad, they have a choice to go on to master's or even obtaining a PhD. For people who are professional, like a nurse, after working for so many years, they have the option for further training and to update their knowledge and skills. So to have this, essentially, is to create this comprehensive system. So people in all vocations, all jobs and walks of life in the country will be fulfilled and also have a path to follow to enrich oneself and to educate oneself.
那说到这个哈，我们就要来反省一下我们现在的教育系统。其实美国算是一个非常完整，很有弹性，非常启发性的一个教育系统。所以很多的国家，尤其很多亚洲国家都在学习美国的系统。但是呢， 看一看全球的系统里面呢、啊，其实我们要反省的一个地方是，我们在技术上是被教训练得很好，可是我们不快乐。好，就是当我们遇到人生挫折的时候呢，我们不知道怎么处理，只能去找心理医生。好，然后我们不知道让我们自己怎么快乐，不知道让他，就是说让，不懂得，不知道怎么让他人快乐。好，这在教育体系里面没有教，所以后来哈佛开了一堂课叫做什么？幸福的课程哦，大爆满。我们从来没有人教我们要怎么让自己幸福快乐，好，所以这个部分是身为父母亲的就要补足这个方面的缺失哈。我们的童年快乐的童年是对我们一生来讲非常重要的。从很多心理学的研究来讲哈，我们童年的生活影响我们一生，一个人的个性。一个人的价值观跟一个人他怎么看待这个人生 是有很重的很大的影响关系。但我们常常都把小朋友送去花钱送去给别人，给别人照顾嘛，然后自己去赚钱，因为那时候是你赚钱最有 能量的时间嘛。 那要不然就是怎样给自己的爷爷奶奶，我是外公外婆，然后呢，然后就送去补习嘛，看要跳舞弹钢琴还是怎么样，然后童年就这样过去了，也不知道小孩怎么长大的，小孩也不知道父母亲到底在外面干嘛，见不到几面。其实要抚育我们的下一代，整个的不是只有在技术面，就是在我们的专业领域而已，不是教我们怎么赚钱过生活，过生活里面还有怎么样去处理自己的烦恼，怎么样让自己快乐，怎么样让这个世界也快乐，是我们现在很不足的。
Speaking of educational system, then we need to take some time to reflect on our current educational system. The US actually has quite a comprehensive educational system that it provides some inspirations for other countries, and in some sense it's quite flexible. But looking at globally, comparing with other countries' educational system, yes, perhaps we have done a good job teaching knowledge and teaching technical skills, but there is a big piece that's missing, which is teaching people how to deal with obstacles, how to deal with unhappiness, the flip side of the coin is how to be happy.How to bring happiness to oneself and as well as to others. And that is why when Harvard University, they have opened an online course about, I don't know the exact title, but about living happily or having a fulfilled life, something along that category. The course was packed, was jam-packed immediately. So there's a dire need for people to learn how to be happy. And so...Since this piece currently is missing in the official educational system, then parents have to pick up the slack and take care of that piece. And so there are a lot of books documenting the importance of having a happy childhood, that it has long-lasting impact on the child's outlook of life, as well as their values and the path of children. So it's very important at this stage to establish these kind of right views about happiness, about bring oneself as well as other people happy and be emotionally healthy. But currently, a lot of parents are not able to do that because they're very busy working. This is the time, prime time in the parents' life to generate income, to earn money, to provide for the family.So they had to give the children to others, schools or to grandparents or additional supplementary schools after school to take care of the children. And yet by doing so, they don't have enough time to interact with the children. So both the children and parents, they feel, they don't know each other very well. They have barely know what's going on in each other's lives. So that is one piece that needs to be really take care of, because it's ultimately very, very important to teach children how to lead a happy life, how to bring happiness to oneself as well as others, and how to deal with obstacles and vexations that arise, that will inevitably arise in life.
我常常我在台湾是研究生的时候，那时候。我在中研院做实验，然后呢，其实我的指导老师，他也往生了哈。那他呢，他们当年啊，在台大是算是很优秀的，然后出来也在各大念书这样子哈，非常优秀的一批老师，那时候出国念书，然后回台湾继续教我们哈。他就跟我们讲说。他就说哈，当初呢，他在北一女的时候呢，有一个学生非常厉害，所有的数学都考不倒他的哈，他在北一女是第一名，然后他当然考到了台大数学系嘛，他喜欢数学，数学系也是第一名，所有的数学问题都考不到他。啊，这么优秀的人，对不对？那当然，毕业之后就来到美国了嘛，哈，当然也是念很好的学校，所有的数学问题都考不到他了，哈。然后呢，两年后大家接到一个讯息，就是他自杀了。为什么呢？因为跟男朋友分手。那我们就觉得说，跟男朋友分手有什么了不起的哈？他为什么要去自杀呢？对我们这种凡夫俗子来讲，可是他一生从小到大就是太优秀了，什么都第一名第一名第一名，最好学校第一学校第一志愿，这样他不知道怎么处理挫折。那跟男朋友分手就自杀，好可惜耶。那我们的教育体系这样培养一个这么优秀的人，然后就自杀。好，那你听到这种就觉得哇天哪，我告诉你，后来我去查中国 美国也一样哦，美国跟中亚洲的天才有没有听过，天才有好下场的没有几个。我们的社会不会培养天才。他们最后都因为压力，因为不会处理生活，因为种种社会的问题，他们很多下场是不怎么好的，你们可以去 Google 一下。
So when I was in grad school in Taiwan, my advisor, who is an excellent scholar, back then there was a group of scholars who graduated from really good universities in Taiwan, and they came to the States for undergrad, and they went back to Taiwan eventually. This really excellent group of scholars,And one of which is my advisor who has already passed away. And she once shared a story with me about one of her students who, classmate.
Your classmate, her classmate.
Okay. So it's my advisor's classmate. When they were in high school, Taipei's first woman's high school.The number one, the best girls high school in Taipei.
The best high school in,
I need to
the best female high school in Taiwan.
So, it's my advisor's classmate. And this classmate was a genius in math, and she's really good. There's no problems that will stumble her. She solves all the mathematical problems with ease. And then so with that kind of ability and talent, she completed college and then also eventually went overseas for grad school. But my advisor says that 2 years later, they received a news, information about this classmate that she had committed suicide. Everyone was shocked. And so the reason for her class, my advisor's classmate's suicide was she broke up with her boyfriend. And so for us now these days, we think about breaking up with a boyfriend. So what? What's the big deal? Why do you need to commit suicide? But because this girl, she, all her life, she has always been the best of everything, very smooth sailing and best in school and everything. So she could not cope with failure or with a breakup. So it's really, really heart-wrenching. After all these years of nurturing trainings, the country and the parents has given her, and that's the met with untimely death. So after that, I went online and I did some Google search of not just in Taiwan, but in the U.S. as well and over the world of all the geniuses. You know the word genius? All the geniuses in the world. And it turned out that not many of them are met with happy endings. Many of them were confronted with different kind of obstacles that comes their way in life and not able to cope with it well and not did not have very good ending. So it seems that our current society, we're not capable of nurturing, training geniuses. The ways that they have been educated has been deficient, and which lead to a lot of the unhappy endings of these extraordinary people.
好，那佛陀要面对的是什么呢？佛这国王要面对种姓的不同子民的教育，佛陀要面对的是其实是六道众生的教育，应该六道众生的教育，也不能讲六道了，就是说他，所以呢这个佛呢，他不要想想说我往昔不是只有指这一世，就是无量世以来，好，我们这他要教，他要这个教育的这些我们这些有情众生，曾经呢在哪一道，好，他就这样曾经住过哪个地方，叫什么名字，是什么种姓，是什么种类，然后呢怎么样饮食的，怎么样的苦受乐受，他是活多久，然后呢在这个中间就是怎样，在生死一轮回的中间是怎么样过的，就像那个国王啊，他不是意念他从小到大是怎么被栽培的吗？那身为佛陀呢，他就得看我们，当然我现在不是在讲神通啊，但是他有那个能力，他一看你啊，这往昔呢，不管是天人啊，还是恶鬼道啊，还是狗啊，就是贪吃，就就是，所以呢，我们那个贪吃哈，就是那个贪吃的习性哈，就会一直跟着我们嘛，就假设很强的一种习性，我只是举个比方，好，就说，哎，他一观这个人，怎么十辈子做人哈，都跟吃有关。然后做的狗呢也这样，然后因为怎样就变恶鬼道，也不跟人家分享，就说他要观察我们哦，这个往昔这样一辈子一辈子是怎么过的，当然佛陀本来就有这个能力啊，佛陀本来就一看就无量劫我们到底是怎么过日子的，然后呢就要给你一个方法，来告诉我们说，你应该要怎么修行啊，你应该要学什么啊，但我们不是说每一个人哦，像我们念经哦，也不是说今天是一个好的老师哦，他不会说啊，我送地藏经，你每个人都送地藏经，地藏经是最好的，全世界人都送地藏经，那剩下的经做什么？可能啊，对不对？有的人适合法华经啊，有的人适合金刚经，对不对？那要看什么？假设好像我们这种慈悲心不够的人，千万要念地藏经，去了解众生的苦。他们很傲慢，自己过得好像反正 就诵地藏经去了解众生的苦。那金刚经是什么呢？假设齁你情执也很重齁，然后你呢你菩萨心肠很强齁，啊最后呢我这举个比方啦齁，啊你看到什么人都想帮，可惜你没有空性的智慧，然后你就会被所有业缘齁就全身绑住套牢，因为你不知道三轮体空怎么帮，怎么用三轮体空来帮助众生的时候，你会被自己的业缘跟众生的业缘套牢，你自己反而不能脱身。不是说不能脱身说要摆脱了，就是说你自己不能解脱，你怎么帮助别人解脱呢？那地藏经不是也讲吗？讲要怎么样怎么样，可是问题是说布施到后来是不是金刚经讲的佛说布施即非布施是名布施，佛说功德即非功德是名功德，有没有？如果说你是一个乐善好施，然后你有个慈悲心很强的人，拜托金刚经念一念。如果你发现你自己怎么觉得没有办法体会众生的苦啊，那你就要去念地藏经啊。众生是如此的苦，你是如此的苦，你要发大悲愿心。然后法华经就是每个经它是在破除某一类就是那个 audience 的执着，那它在辅助我们怎么样成佛道的嘛。所以佛陀一定要有这个本事，不然他49年讲那么多经干嘛，里面有的是大弟子，有的是大菩萨啊，有的是大阿罗汉，有的是有没有，他的开经的时候都会说他对谁讲嘛，对不对？那他就有本事一看，诶这个人他的根性是什么，哇他过去世都是怎么来的，他是怎么过日这样子一世一世下来的，今世有幸可以学佛了修行了，那你要怎么样教导他让他可以走上成佛之道，这也不是人人能做的，他有这个本事。
So with the eighth Buddha chakra, it's now then talking about the Buddha, having need to look into the origins of all sentient beings, the immeasurable past lives of all these immeasurable sentient beings, to know that where this sentient being has come from, what name, the caste system, what category, what type of being,the kind of food that was consumed, the different kinds of sufferings and bliss that the person, that being has underwent, ages, places of living, etc. The Buddha investigate, look into, the lives of all these immeasurable sentient beings and try to come up with this educational system or come up with ways to help and reach out the innumerable sentient beings.So, Buddha has this ability, we're not necessarily talking about spiritual power, but he just has this ability to see through, a person or a being's past. So, for instance, a Buddha can be looking at a person and see that, past few lives you were a heavenly beings, and before that perhaps you were human, and then you became a hungry ghost. And all these, your lives, all these immeasurable lives, or the past 10 lives,seems to have all revolve around your cravings for food. So when you were heavenly beings, you were craving food, human beings, you were craving food, and becoming animals, and hungry ghosts, you're still craving for food. And so seeing this, the nexus, the problem, the origin of the problem, then the Buddha is able to provide the most appropriate method to help that being, cut off the attachment, and to remove vexations. So think about all the sutras that we know about, Avatamsaka Sutra, the Diamond Sutra, Chigabra Bodhisattva Sutra. These sutras are intended to help you counter different sorts of, obstacles and vexations. So a truly great master would not be saying to his disciples that everybody should recite this one particular sutra. This is the best sutra of them all. That's not the case. The sutras have different purposes. So for instance, for people who feel that you may perhaps lack compassion or you don't understand people's sufferings very well, then those kind of people should try to recite Chittagong Bodhisattva sutras, because in the sutra, it talks about all the sufferings the sentient beings that go through. On the other hand, if you're someone who actually has a lot of compassion and you want to help everyone around you, yet because you don't have the wisdom of emptiness, then what ends up happening is this lack of wisdom led to your becoming entangled in everybody's life and everybody's problems. In that case, then you should be reciting the Diamond Sutra. Diamond Sutra helps to cut through all these kind of entanglements. Remember in the sutra, it talks about the Buddha speaks of offerings, but it's not really offerings. It's just only named as offerings. So concepts like these, the concept of having no object, no subject, and no act of giving, this kind of concept is especially suitable for cutting through vexations and giving you more wisdom. So the Buddha lived in, he gave a lot of teaching in 49 years, and of all these different kinds of sutras that he expounded, and oftentimes in the beginning of a sutra, there's a description of who the sutra was intended for, who was in the audience. So that means all these different kind of sutras are supposed to be used to help you cut away different types of vexations.
那佛陀来到人间，这个释迦牟尼佛是被我们被选上当我们的这个教主的，在娑婆世界的教主，虽然他只活了80年的时间，但他来到人间呢，他给我们的一个学习系统，如果说是以天台的五识来讲，就是他在菩提树下证悟的时候，是先讲什么？先讲华严，对不对？哇，他看到了佛的境界，他直接讲华严了。其实讲华严的时候，忽然发现我们在这娑婆世界的众生如此不堪，怎么没有人听懂啊？准备走了，再见。然后大梵天还帮我们求说拜托拜托了，因为他大梵天也要照顾我们了。然后这批人什么都不懂，就留下来教我们吧。那佛陀就留下来，对不对？他留下来一看看我们这样，他就好吧，咱们从根本的开始做起，先讲阿含经。阿含经讲的就在讲，我们修行者就是不管出家在家，身为一个修行人呢，我们在日常生活中要怎么吃饭，要怎么走路，要怎么讲话，要怎么样把我们的身口意业照顾好，就阿含经全部在告诉我们怎么样如法如律的过生活。先讲，像 小朋友一样嘛，先脚会走路再讲，然后会走路之后开始讲什么？阿含经讲完讲那个叫做什么平等的，讲不二法门的，就说这个跟那个没有不一样，这个跟那个没有不一样，然后第三个讲什么？讲般若空性，先破除我们那个对立嘛，对立讲完再直接往上就讲般若空性，般若空性讲完讲什么？讲法华了，法华涅槃，我有没有跳啊？华严阿含那个不二法门般若空性，对，最后法华涅槃的时候就是佛陀要走了，他说我呢这一辈子讲这些都是方便法，因为跟我们的根器有关嘛，是方便法讲来的，讲完之后我其实要讲的只有一讲，我最主要讲就讲佛圣那个三圣，声闻缘觉跟菩萨圣是方便讲的啦，因为我们有不同根器嘛，对吧？ 不同根基就讲这个法这个法这个法，但是我现在要走了哈，我一定要交代清楚，我最主要讲的是要讲最最高的佛圣。好，然后就再见。好，涅槃。那这就是佛陀给我们在这个世间娑婆世间哈给我们的教育系统。阿伽玛，阿伽玛对吧？阿含是不是阿伽玛？
So, think back to, Shakyamuni Bodhisattva, Shakyamuni Buddha. He was assigned to be the Buddha of this human realm. And he was here with us for 80 years. And when he first became, so there's actually a progression of the different types of sutra he taught in the 49 years that he taught us. When he first became enlightened, the first sutra that he taught was the Avatamsaka Sutra. And after spoken the sutra, he realized that this is way too difficult for the people. The audience doesn't understand what I'm talking about. So at that point, he actually gave rise to the thought that maybe I shouldn't be teaching here. Maybe I should just go ahead and enter Nirvana. And it was the great Deva, heavenly Deva, that actually beseeched the Buddha, saying, please stay and continue to teach us. So from that point on, the Buddha moved on to the second stage where he taught the Agama Sutra. And this is where it starts to teach people, like babies, the ways to conduct oneself, the way to eat, the way to walk, starting from the very, very ground up, very foundational stuff. And after that, he started to talk about the Prajna Sutras, how to... Correction. Moving on, he started to talk about the sutra of non-dualistic, which is the Vilalakirti Sutra. So again, having non-dualistic views.
Fangden.
And then from that point on, the fourth stage is the fourth stage that he started to teach the Prajna Sutras. And finally, at the end, he taught the Lotus Sutra. And at the very end of his life, he explained to everyone that all these different sutras that I've taught, and I taught three vehicles, but those are all expedient means to reach out to the different types of sentient beings. But ultimately, all my teaching all boils down to the vehicle of Buddha. All the teachings pointing you to attaining the Buddhahood.
好，那今天时间也快到了哈。但呢，我们还有两轮，因为再强调一遍哈，因为这一部经最重要的就是第二章节哈，十轮，好是整体佛法的架构在里面哈，所以花多一点时间讲。那下一轮要讲什么呢？哈，讲要怎么命中了哈，这很重要哈，就是怎么命中往生善去哈。身为一个国王，也必须要照顾哈。我们不是只有讲出生哈啊，怎么长大哈？那我们要怎么死？哈，他也有他的观察哈。那佛陀呢，怎么看待生死哈？我们佛教怎么看待生死？第九轮、第十轮哈是最精彩，后面要成佛了哈。那我们就下一次再把它，下一次就可以把九、第十 finish 这样子。
Our time today is almost up, so we have to end here. We spent quite a bit of time on this second chapter, which is a detailed description of the 10 chakras. And the reason why so much time is spent is because that is the essence of this entire sutra. So in the 8th chakra, we talked about looking back in the origin and coming up with the most appropriate means of cultivation. Next time, we're going to get into the 9th and the 10th sutra, where they discuss the issues of birth and death, only not only from the kingly perspective, but also from the Buddha's perspective of birth and death. And so we are going to wrap up the entire chapter 2 in our next session by finishing up the 9th and 10th chakra.
Okay, 那当然之后还有后面第三章以后还有几个重要的主题，比如说第三卷开始讲戒律，然后讲忏悔，怎么解脱，然后怎么念佛都会讲，那这个主题我们就会比较大块大块的讲。
And after that, after closing chapter 2, there are still a few major concepts in the latter chapters. For instance, in chapter 3, start talking about the methods of upholding precepts, the method of repentance, how do you recite the Buddha's names. And so these are still very important and helpful for our cultivation, and these will be addressed in a more, a broader perspective.
好，那我们现在一起来回向，回向记，transfer the merit.